ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते
हरे कृष्ण डियर डिवोटीज दिस मॉर्निंग वी रीडिंग फ्रॉम सेकंड कैंटो श्रीमद् भागवतम चैप्टर 7 टेक्स्ट 12 Matsyo yuganta samaye manupalabdha.
Matsyo yuganta samaye manupalabdha.
Kshoni mayo nikila jiva nikaya ketha. Vishram sita nurubaye salile mukhan me.
Vishram sita
Adaya tatra vijaharana, sorry, Adaya tatra vijaharaha vidamargan. Word by word translation. Matsyaha,
incarnation of the fish.
Yuganta,
at the end of the millennium.
Samaye,
at the time of.
Manuna, the would-be Vaivasvata Manu. Upalabdha,
seeing.
Shoni Maya,
up to the earthly planets.
Nikila,
all.
Jiva,
living entities.
Nikaya Keta,
shelter for.
Visram Sita,
emanating from.
Guru,
great.
Bhaye,
out of fear.
Salile,
in the water.
Mukhat,
from the mouth.
Me,
mine.
Adaya,
having taken to.
Tatra,
there.
Vijahara,
enjoy it.
Ha,
certainly.
Vedamargan,
all the Vedas.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, His Confounder Acharya Bhai Charanaravinda Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. At the end of the millennium, the would-be Vaivasvata Manu of the name Satyavrata would see that the Lord in the fish incarnation is the shelter of all kinds of living entities, up to those in the earthly planets. Because of my fear of the vast water at the end of the millennium, the Vedas come out of my mouth, Brahma is speaking here, and the Lord enjoys those vast waters and protects the Vedas. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. During one day of Brahma, there are 14 Manus. And at the end of each Manu, there is devastation up to the earthly planets. And the vast water is fearful even to Brahma. So in the beginning of the would-be Vaivasvata Manu, such devastation would be seen by him. There would be many other incidents also, such as the killing of the famous Sankashura. This foretelling is by the past experience of Brahmaji, who knew that in that fearful, devastating scene, the Vedas would come out of his mouth, but the Lord in his fish incarnation not only would save all living entities, namely the demigods, animals, men and great sages, but would also save the Vedas. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. So dear devotees, today Brahmaji is speaking to his son Narada, and particularly he addresses the Matsya avatar of the Lord. And Brahma is very much aware of this incarnation of the Lord because he has seen many of them. He has seen many Matsya incarnations because in the one day at Brahma, 14 Manus appears, and at the end of each Manu, there is devastation. So Brahma is seeing many Matsyas coming. The same Matsya, but reappearing again and again. So he's speaking from experience. I saw the Lord, he came like a fish. He's telling his son, Narada Muni. And there was tremendous devastation due to water. The water is rising due to torrential rains to the earthly plane. Basically, the whole planet, the bottom, is all submerged in water up to the earthly Bhumandala. Everything becomes submerged. Even Brahma feels afraid. Wow, he sees the water is coming. And he feels uncomfortable. So, this is at the end of his day, just before he goes to rest. And here it's written that because of fear, the vast water of the end of the millennium, the Vedas come out of my mouth. So Brahma starts to recite the Vedas due to fear. He's afraid, so he remembers Krishna immediately. So all the Vedas are coming out, he's reciting. You know, like the Brahmins when they sit to recite Purusha Shukta, you've seen how they recite, completely absorbed. So Brahma was doing that. The Vedas were coming out. And so there is a very interesting story that is, I believe, which canto? 8th canto, 9th canto is mentioned, Matsya Avatar, anyone remembers? So the whole story is explained there about Satyavrata. Is one of the Manus. He was a king. And he was performing his daily duties. And he grabbed with a little pot of water like that. He grabbed some water from the river to use for his daily duties. And within that pot, there was a little fish. So he took the fish and he tried to place it back in the river. But the fish said to him, "My dear sir, if you put me inside, I'm so small, all these big fishes will eat me. So please give me protection." So he was the king, he was thinking, "Yes, I have to give protection." And he kept the fish in the little pot. So when he returned home, the fish grew big. He couldn't be contained in that pot. So he put a larger container with water. And within a short period of time, that fish grew bigger. And then he took a bigger container, it grew bigger. And then he thought, "Wow, this fish is too big for any containers. Let me put the fish in the pond." So he took the fish, put the fish in the pond. So it was a little pond in his palace. The fish grew and became too small for the pond. Then he took the fish with the help of his servants, put it in the lake, a bigger lake. Within again short period of time, the fish grew, supersized fish, so it did not contain in that lake. And he decided, "What can we do? We have to just take that fish to the ocean." So by some transcendental arrangement, they took the fish with his servants to the ocean, and they threw the fish inside. So out of gratitude, the fish began to reveal to him. He said to him that within 7 days there will be a great flood. And you, since you are the Manu, you have to continue the creation. So you have to get into a boat and you have to get all the different herbs, seeds, animals that are there, the seven sages, Saptarishi. And with the help of the demigods, he got all these different varieties of species that were there. So the demigods were helping him also too, because you know, one person, what can one person do, you know? So the demigods were helping him. And within 7 days, he prepared this boat, and suddenly this torrential rains started. And then the whole universe gradually was submerged. So then they jumped on the boat and started sailing inside these torrential rains. And then Satyavrata Muni, he became also a little fearful, so he started to pray to the Lord. He actually realized that this was the Lord, because, you know, no other living entity can grow in such proportions. It's not possible. So he realized this is probably the Lord. This is the Lord coming into some incarnation to perform his lila. So when the water started to come, flooding, he started to beg the Lord to appear and protect him. So Matsya appeared, Matsya Avatar appeared, and he had this golden horn. And he just spoke to Satyavrata. It's explained he spoke very sweetly to Satyavrata that, you know, tie this snake, Vasuki, to my horn, and basically I will guide you through the waters of devastation to a safer place. So there were many of these incarnations of Matsya, and this pastime is recorded in varieties of literatures, such as Mahabharata, Matsya Purana, Srimad Bhagavatam, of course. I believe there is few other Puranas that mention the Matsya avatar. And the stories may vary a little bit. So some said that he took him to the top peak of the Himalayas. Some stories say Mandara Mountain or something like that. So he took Manu to that high mountain to prevent them from the waters of devastation, protect them in that way. So while the Matsya avatar was pulling the boat of Manu, they had this amazing conversation about the absolute truth, the ultimate truth of life. Satyavrata Muni, Manu was basically investigating. He was asking from the Lord, what is the purpose of life? Why is this thing happening? You know, what is the aim of life? What should I be doing? What should I not be doing? And the Lord was revealing to him the Vedic literatures. So, after he was protected, Manu, the sages, the different living entities, the plants, the herbs, the Lord realized that the Vedas were actually kidnapped by a demon called Hayagriva. It's the same as the Lord's avatar, Hayagriva, but it's different. It's this demon was basically inimical towards the Vedic culture. So he stole the Vedas, and he was thinking in that way, I can prevent the living entities from becoming liberated. Envious people are demons. So he was an envious person, and he wanted to prevent others to realize the goal of life. So what is envious people are not only desiring to stay in this material world themselves, but they also want that others should not go like that, these envious people. Like sometime I remember at school, when I was at school, and we go to the school every day. Some guys, they didn't want to go to the school. Yeah? They want to smoke, drink, and they'll try to canvass to some of the students. Why do you have to go today to the school? You know, come, we're going to have fun. We're going to play games. We're going to smoke. It's not only that they don't want to go themselves, but they will try to prevent others from going to school. You know? So like that, the demon is not that he is not interested in Krishna himself. He wants to stay in the material world, but he will also canvass so that others will not go. to do the right thing, like that. So this Hayagriva was like that. So the Lord killed him actually and took the Vedas as this incarnation of Matsya. So someone may say, what's so special about the Vedas? Sometimes we hear the 94% of the Vedas is Karma Kanda. But Karma Kanda means processes and methods of executing worldly activities. Basically, people who are karmis, they perform Karma Kanda. You see. So what's so special of the Vedas? Why the Lord has to save the Vedas? Well, the Vedas are actually encouraging the living entities to perform at least Karma Kanda activities, because that is sort of a punya karma. Some pious activities are there, some sacrifices are performed, some austerities. Maybe they are not for attaining the topmost goal of life, but at least the Vedas will encourage them to behave properly so they can attain the heavenly planets or something like that. Otherwise, if the Vedas disappear, what happens is Ugra Karma. Because the living entities don't know what to do. And therefore, they engage in ghastly, self-destructive and destructive activities. Therefore, even if the Vedas are not given the topmost knowledge to the living entities, at least the majority, the bigger portion of the Vedas, perhaps only 4% of the Vedas are dealing with bhakti, and 96% I've heard from ISKCON devotees saying, some devotees who have studied the Vedic literatures, at least that's what it's left on the planet, is mostly Karma Kanda. But still the Lord knows that if the living entities perform Vedic activities, sacrifices, they gradually become elevated. They become gradually elevated due to their piety, and one day they can connect to bhakti. So the Vedas is very much necessary. So the Lord is put in the Vedas a system by which the living entities can enjoy in this material world. Although they want to be separate from Him, He is still looking after the living entities. He is providing the Vedas. Okay, this is the way you will enjoy in this world. You don't want to be with Me? Okay, you follow these Vedic scriptures and you will become happy. This is the compassion and the kindness of Krishna in this material world. But of course, there are living entities that are demonic, asuras, envious of the Lord. So why should He be worshipped? Why should God be worshipped? So whenever they see some people performing some sacrifices, whatever, they become enraged. They become angry because they feel God is a competitor. Because they remind them of God. Even if they're worshipping some demigods or whatever, still it reminds them of God. So don't worship these demigods. Don't worship God. Just forget about the Vedas completely. So there are people like that. There are entities like this. Very, very powerful personalities can be very envious as well. Sometimes we think if someone becomes very rich, he'll become free of envy. Because he's got too much wealth and then everyone is below him. Not really. Even if he's the wealthiest, that is the manifestation of his envy, that wealth. Because he became wealthy to prove that he's the most powerful, and that is basically the poison. All his wealth is this poison. And that person, for example, Hiranyakashipu was the most powerful emperor. He conquered all the universes. And he was still envious of the Lord and all the other living entities. He was envious of the demigods. That doesn't mean that if you become very rich and very powerful, your envy will decrease. No, it will increase much more. So the only way we can get free of envy is to become aware of the ultimate truth, of the topmost conclusion of the Vedas, which is given in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, specifically. Even the Vedanta Sutra had to be somewhat explained by Vyasadeva, otherwise it didn't make sense to the living entities in terms of the ultimate goal of life. Vyasadeva had to explain the natural commentary of Vedanta Sutra with Srimad Bhagavatam. And Bhagavatam is solely dedicated to Krishna devotional service. So the only way we can become free from the illusion of this material world is to study the topmost conclusions of the Vedas. And we are very fortunate that Srila Prabhupada has given us these topmost conclusions in the form of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita. Now we have the opportunity to overcome even the mentality of piety, trying to be pious, living being, and try to enjoy in this material world. We can even overcome this and ultimately go home, go back to Godhead, the spiritual world. So this is Prabhupada's mercy upon all of us. But therefore, although we have the facility, we have to now work on ourselves to be able to get the benefits of this facility. We should not take the offering of Prabhupada cheaply, but we should think that Prabhupada has given me the ticket, he's given me the passport, he's given me the visa for the spiritual world, but then I should actually make sure that I utilize them properly. The map, he gave us the map, Srimad Bhagavatam, and the visa passport is the holy name, you know, you connect with the Lord directly. Now, dear devotees, every one of us in this material world is subjected to envy. Therefore, we have these material bodies. None of us is free of envy. So, the real enemy, the worst enemy, is the mind that is contaminated by envy. And that envy ultimately is the envy of Krishna. So these facilities that Prabhupada has provided for us are meant to purify us from this envy. So the holy name of Krishna can give us Krishna. But we know from the Acharya's teachings that there are three levels of chanting. There is Namaparat, Namabhas, and Sudanam. So Chaitanya Charitamrita explains that if we chant in the Namaparat, it will take millions of lifetimes for us to get purified. Bahu Janmi, Kariyari, Shravana Kirtana, Tabutana Paya Krishna, Pade Premadana. Every morning you are reciting this verse, right? Before Japa. Why? Why millions of years sound so discouraging? No, I'm trying to encourage you to get out of the Namaparat chanting stage. So, how do you know you are on the level of Namaparat? Introspection. Kadamba Kana Maharaj said, you just record your chanting. Start chanting, put the smartphone next to you, use it for the right purpose. Most of the time we use it for wrong purposes. Hopefully not. So, put it there and just chant. And then after some time, hear yourself chanting. And you'll be shocked. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram. Where's the Hare Hare? I hear many devotees don't chant Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. Hare Krishna, Krishna. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. Hare. Even once I heard one devotee, that was shocking. I've never heard such chanting in my whole life.
Hare Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Krishna. Can you believe it?
And he was not aware. He was not aware. He was pacing the temple room and he was chanting Hare Krishna, but he was very angry, probably disturbed by something. Hare Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Krishna, Hare Rama. I was shocked, you know. Of course, this is an extreme example. So, certainly, our chanting needs to improve if we really want to take advantage of the Vedas. You see, the Lord is going through so much austerity, killing demons to protect them. So we have to take the advantage, you know, whatever is being offered to us by Prabhupada, very, very sincerely. So hear your chanting. Try to make sure you pronounce the Mahamantra properly. Be in a meditative mood, humbly begging the Lord for His mercy, acknowledging our weaknesses, whatever weaknesses we may have, we have to spot them on. Usually, the weaknesses are not so difficult to spot on. They are about seven major. Lust, greed, anger, envy, madness, illusion. What else is there? Huh? What? Huh? False ego, yeah. Did I cover? Lust, greed, anger, envy, madness, illusion. Okay, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur said one more is there. Seventh, pride. Yeah. These are the seven enemies of the mind. And so it is required that we become introspective. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj usually used to tell us that is not just about chant Hare Krishna and be happy. You know, he said that if you don't introspect to see your weakness, you will not be able to chant even Namabhas, what to speak of Sudanam. And therefore, chant Hare Krishna and be happy will not work. You know, so therefore you have to introspect and spot on the enemies of the mind and then disassociate from them. Consciously, conscious disassociation from them. Now, how do you do that? You should try to understand what is envy, what is lust, what is greed, what is anger, what is madness, what is illusion, what is pride. You should try to see them in your heart when they manifest. And when you see them, dear devotees, then you know, okay, Mr. Lust is coming, okay, Mr. Greed is coming, Mr. Anger is coming, Mr. Envy is coming, Mr. Illusion, Mr. Whatever, Pride, all these Misters and Misses maybe. Whatever, they can disguise in different ways. So, we have to spot them and make sure that, okay, I'm not going to act on this. And when you see like this, when you see the enemy and when you consciously disassociate from the enemy, that is how you come to to Namabhas. When you actually start to be conscious of what's going on inside of you. And what are you doing? You know, you start to be aware of the internal dialogue, the internal construct. Because what remains with you after the body's demise is your subtle body. You take your subtle body with you. So if you don't become purified in the subtle body by a conscious choice that I'm not going to become angry now, I'm not going to become lusty, I'm not going to become greedy, envious, I'm not going to act on these dictates of my urges, the 6-7 urges that are there. And now if you feel that these urges are too strong, then what is the solution? The solution is to remember Bhagavad Gita, 7th chapter, text 14. Devihi asya gunamayi mama maya durataya mameva me praparente maya metam tarantite. Krishna tells Arjuna, this divine energy of mine, comprised of the three modes of material nature, is very difficult to overcome. But one who surrenders unto me, O Arjuna, he very easily crosses behind it. So whenever, first of all, we should learn how the enemies look. What is their appearance? And when we see them, then we try to overcome them by surrendering to Krishna. And doing the opposite of what they are asking us to do, by conscious choice. When we do this, then we can actually aspire to come to Namabhas. And when you come to Namabhas, you can be liberated from these horrible influences. Namabhas liberates you only, you see. But doesn't give prema. We have to come to Shudanam for prema. So, how do we come to Shudanam? Is we have to serve the devotees. And by serving humbly the devotees, that humility allows the spiritual energy to penetrate our consciousness. You see, envy and humility, they cannot coexist. You know, pride and humility cannot coexist. They are separate, completely separate. So, the more we see ourselves as the servant of the devotees, the more our consciousness becomes open for the divine energy of the Lord to flood our consciousness. So this is the secret. In the spiritual world, there is no envy. How do you know that we are envious of others? We are choosy with whom to associate, in a sense, who makes us feel good. We are choosy. And that's, we don't like some people, somehow, you know, I don't feel good around them. And this is because we see everything through ahankara, the deformed vision of the world. Have you ever actually ever thought, am I seeing the other devotees as souls, or am I seeing them as bodies? Have you ever thought like that? Have you ever asked yourself this question? I did. A few days ago, I was asking myself again, hey, how am I seeing the devotees? Am I seeing them as this body, or am I seeing them as a soul? So if you haven't asked this question to yourself, then you should ask. And what is the answer? If you see others as an object of service, that means you are seeing them as souls, immediately. Pandita Samadarshana. If you see others as an object of enjoyment, immediately you are seeing them as bodies. Which devotee can give me what? What I can benefit from them? And what I can lose in their association in terms of material comfort? Whether it's, you know, gross or subtle. You know. And so we're so conditioned by these things. And we are afraid to offer our heart in relationship with devotees. We are afraid because the false ego is afraid that it will be inconvenienced. This is all. So, His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami used to say that the greatest warriors are the spies. The greatest warriors are the spies. The spy can go into the enemy's camp without being noticed, and he can destroy the enemy. Yeah, there is a lot of historical account how some army, they sent spies, and then they got information and they destroyed everyone like that. So, these seven enemies of the mind, the six plus pride mentioned by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they are actually spies in disguise. They actually represent themselves as your friend, as our friends. And if we don't recognize them, if we are not conscious, introspective, if we are not careful, then we will just continue to entertain them. Oh, Mr. Lust is my friend. Mr. Greed is my friend. And in fact, they will appear in such a way that they will convince you that they are your friend. If you don't act in this way, you'll lose. Just like Shukracharya. He was the external manifestation of all these six enemies, seven enemies. How? Lord Vamana appeared, Vishnu appeared in front of Bali Maharaj. And Shukracharya told him, you know, don't give him anything. This guy is going to cheat you. He knew that this is God. He knew this is Vishnu. But he told him he's going to cheat you. So he was presenting himself as the well-wisher of Bali. Just think about it. He was presenting himself as the well-wisher of Bali and putting the Lord into a bad light. You see. So in the same way, these six enemies, seven enemies, they do like that. They'll tell you, hey, don't do this, because if you do this, then you'll suffer in some way. Your comfort will be disturbed. Huh? So in that way, you become, yes, this is my friend, but he's the spy in disguise who is trying to destroy. That's all. So therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, all the acharyas, they explain we have to become very introspective about who we are, what we're doing, what's our consciousness. If you do kirtan, chanting the holy name, what's your consciousness? Are you worshipping the Lord or are you worshipping yourself? What is your consciousness? When you worship the deity, are you worshipping the Lord? Or you are just thinking I'm the extra deity on the altar? Huh? When you cook for the Lord, are you cooking for the Lord or are you cooking to gratify your own senses? Huh? Like this. So you should check your consciousness. Because if you don't do nama aparat, everything nama aparat. And when it's nama aparat, then we have in groups and out groups. I like this guy, I don't like that one. He's my friend, he's my enemy. It's a demonic consciousness. You know. So, we will not be able to make advancement, serious advance. Prabhupada has given you everything. He's given you the map, he's given you the visa, the ticket, everything. But he wants you to utilize it properly. Envy prevents you to understand. When someone is teaching you some advice, envy prevents you to understand what they are saying. Envy prevents you to understand the Shastra. You cannot understand Shastra if you're envious. You know. Another thing I heard from Bhaktivinoda Maharaj, he says if someone is envious to some degree, he may not be able to remain for a long time as a devotee, because that envy will take him out. And he said, now what do? We all have the envy in the heart. That's why we got this body. He says we have to try to counteract this envy consciously by surrendering to the Lord. And he said, if we do this, then we stand the chance to practice the devotional process properly, take the medicine properly, so then it will have an effect on us, on our consciousness, to ultimately become, to attain prema. So the last thing I would say is that I heard this from Radhanath Swami Maharaj, that if you become attached to an ordinary human being, then if you offer something to that ordinary human being, he will use it for his sense gratification. And then you will become involved in karmic activity. But if you become attached to a devotee of the Lord and you offer some service to that devotee of the Lord, the devotee will offer your service to the Lord himself, and then you'll become purified and liberated. So this is how you destroy the envy, by serving the Vaishnavas. This is the medicine. Oh, I don't feel like serving this person. Do it. But I don't like him, you know. Why should I serve him, you know? He's sometimes rude to me, you know. I'll just serve the person. And if you serve them, if you're concerned about them, even if you can't serve them in some way, if someone maybe is really offensive, if you're concerned about them, if you're their well-wisher, that is enough of your envy to be changed and transformed. But if you say, I hate the person who hates me, So basically that is the same illness being presented in our consciousness. So we have to be very careful of how we see one another. Are we seeing the other devotees as bodies, or you see them as souls? Are you seeing the people on the street as bodies, or you see them as souls? If you see them as bodies, my dear devotees, you will never preach to them, because you think this is, he is the body, he is happy already where he is, why should I tell him anything? You know. But if you see that soul is suffering by misidentifying with this horrible body, and he doesn't know what body he'll get in the next life, then you will go and say, my dear sir, nice to meet you. My name is such and such, and I would like to present this literature to you. Or, you know, if it's a colleague, you speak to him, make warm him up for some time, and then give them some prasadam, tell them my mother cooked it for my birthday, or something like this, take and give them prasadam. Just make friends, but you have to be genuine. If you don't have the faith, if you don't have the purity, they will see right through it. If you're just externally trying to pretend that you're wanting to preach to them, they can see all that. But if you're actually sincerely trying to help and touch the heart of this person, they'll feel it. This person loves me. They'll feel that thing. They'll feel your kindness, your genuine care. You see? So we have to develop this consciousness. And if you don't see others as souls, you'll never preach to them. This is the conclusion. You'll never give them the Vedas. The Lord fought with the demon to protect the Vedas for us. But we have the Vedas, but why should I give him the Vedas? You know, let him enjoy his life. In fact, he's doing much better than me. He's got more money. He's got nice car, nice house. I've got nothing, you know. I'm worshipping Krishna and I'm living, sleeping on a floor, you know, something like this, you know. That is envy. Envious people don't preach to others. You see. Because they themselves don't understand the value of Krishna consciousness. What to speak of sharing it with another person. So we have to be always humble, begging the Lord for mercy, and trying to, you know, eradicate this worst enemy, foundational enemy. Because in the spiritual world there is no envy. It's absolutely free of envy, Vaikuntha. Nobody is thinking, hey, someone is a stone in the spiritual world. Hey, I should be a gopi. Look at they, how enjoying, you know. They don't think like this. Everyone is satisfied where they are. Everyone is worshipping all the other devotees. Everyone is worshipping Krishna. Nobody is thinking, you know, I am a blade of grass. I should be something else. I am such a great person and Krishna is stepping on me. What is this nonsense? If you have this mentality, you can never enter Vrindavan. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai. Aranti Kori Vaishnava Vrinda ki. Jai. Gaur Premanandi. So today is Madhvacharya's disappearance day, and I knew that Prabhu will ask something about it. Just like Brahma knew that there will be devastation because of experience, I also, from experience, I checked the calendar because I knew who's going to come and what he's going to do. Mahatma Prabhu ke. So in brief, Madhvacharya is the founder acharya of our movement. In a sense, he started this sampradaya. And Srila Prabhupada represents him in one sense. In another sense, we're entering much deeper into what Madhva gave. Madhva was incarnation of Vayu, great devotee of the Lord. And he appeared in Udupi, in the families of a family of Brahmanas. And from very small, he was extremely scholarly and very pure, and always concerned about the ultimate truth. He was not concerned about anything else. There is a story, at the age of 5, he went to one village, and there was a Brahmin preaching, a pandit. This 5-year-old boy spotted some mistake in his presentation, and he put up his hand and he corrected, humbly corrected the presentation, and then The Brahmin agreed and all people became completely astonished. This five-year-old boy, he actually could spot, and none of us spotted that he spoke something wrong. Later on, his father, who was a pandit also, he spotted some mistake within his father's presentation, and he corrected his father. And the father was very happy that my son is so amazing. So the father would teach him the Vedic literatures. And sometimes he will teach him something and the next day he will repeat, and the boy will say to me, "Why are you telling me the same thing? I already heard this. Give me a new thing." He was so intelligent. He could remember everything that someone told him. So he would remember. Once he heard, and then that was it. He remembers. So he became initiated as Brahman at the age of 7. And gradually he became known as a great scholar, and he would defeat the Mayavadi philosophy. He presented the Dvaita philosophy, that the living entity and the Lord are different, and the living entity is the servant of the Lord. He will present this philosophy, and he will start preaching everywhere there. So many people recognize this purity, including one Muslim ruler. One time the Muslim soldiers tried to protect him, to prevent him to go to the other side of the river. But he just jumped into the river and he swam across. And they were bewildered. This person swam across this big river. And then they were thinking, he's not afraid. He went straight to the Muslim king. And the Muslim king asked him, "Why are you not afraid of me and my soldiers?" He said, "Why should I be afraid of you and your soldiers? You're worshipping the same God as me. And I have full faith in the Lord that the Lord will protect me. So why should I be afraid of you or these soldiers or something like that?" So the king recognized this person is a great saint. Nobody should touch him. So he defeated many Mayavadis and many different scholars and established the Dvaita Vedanta philosophy. He preached all over India, had many disciples, sannyasis. He wrote many books as well. He was initially called Vasudev, that was his name by his mother and father, but later on he was initiated as Madhvacharya, and he kept that name as a sannyas name, Madhvacharya. 12, yeah. Age of 12 he took sannyas, yeah. So extremely powerful personality. There is a whole book about Madhvacharya you should learn. And ultimately he laid the foundation for this Sampradaya in this particular age, in Kali Yuga. He became the propounder of the Madhvacharya. And then in our lineage, all the gurus, they accepted his teachings. And of course, we are Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. We added the extra touch of Gauranga Mahaprabhu's teachings, revealing Krishna and Vraja Lila. Madhvacharya never spoke about this. Madhvacharya was famous for his strength as well, being incarnation of Vayu and Bhima, some say combined, and Hanuman as well. Sometimes he can catch a Mayavadi and throw him into the next village. It was so powerful. Just catch him for the, you know, kurta, and the next village. He's an extremely powerful person. So nobody would joke with him. Nobody would come any close to him, you know. Not only philosophically and spiritually he was strong, he was also very physically strong. So that's how Krishna empowers his devotees to reestablish Dharma. So we should become attached to the devotees, because this is the way to make advancement. So, Hare Krishna, Madhvacharya ki jaya, Granthvaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jaya. Bhakta Prabhu told me to tell you all, come to Ratha Yatra tomorrow, don't forget. And also 10 o'clock, those of you who are taking part in rehearsals for the Ratha Yatra in the theater, there will be some rehearsals. Music, yeah, singing. Those of you who are singing for the Ratha Yatra, just come at 10 o'clock there. Anything else? You can say? Speak loud. Well, I didn't hear.
Frate, Yatraki.